We're here at the Black Cat tonight, waiting for Shearwater to take the stage. Shearwater have released a really great new record. If you're fans of Hockaville River, you're probably here because you know Shearwater. Maybe you're a fan of Palo Santo, the record they put out in 2006. But Rook is a remarkably strong record, and I think it's going to make it on a lot of people's best of record of the year. And one of the reasons we're here, in fact, is because the record is such a strong record. As Jonathan Myberg takes the stage with Shearwater, straps on a banjo. Enjoy the show, everybody.
That was going to get ugly real fast. Since the first of you and me asleep in a Nibelungen land, Titanic curses trapped me in a banishment of style. Symbols vanish from my senses, so dim and stale the view appears. Symbols captured in a trance vanish from my glance. For the various defenses, iron forces strike the alarm. For the various defenses that choose to be here and there and lose their direction everywhere. Since the first of you and me asleep in a Nibelungen land where we cannot be. Almond trees grow along the mountain trail, the words that tongues are spelling, the telling known. I cannot hear it anymore. I cannot hear it anymore. Since the first of you and me, here and there, we lose the direction everywhere. Shrieking city sun shiver in my veins, and flames I run, and flames I run, waiting for the sign to come. Will you spell the words for me? Nibelungen, Nibelungen, Nibelungen land. Thank you. shoot from your door. Had a look at your scars. You're over someone. You forget who I am. There ain't a head like stars. And kind of
at it and decided, well, Thor only uses like five notes on that thing. So Thor built one with five notes on it. And there it is. Set of songs all about the singer Nico. And the record kind of starts with she died on the island of Ibiza, and she fell off a bicycle having a stroke. And so the record kind of starts in what I imagine to be her kind of last moments, and then it goes backward from there. So this is where this I know this is a cheerful subject, I'm sorry. But people have asked me about this song, and that's what this song is about.
Something is breathing in the air. Something is moving in the water, and the wind's in you.
keep trying to forget the fact that we're also webcasting through NPR right now to untold tens of people. So Jeanse and Annie and Paige and Marianne, this one's for you. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming out to see us tonight.
Shearwater. What a great set. I'm sure they'll be here for more. His photo's online. Here they come.
the way is to climb, the way is to last time, and let the moon do its work on your body, and to rise, forest and oceans of love.
This is Father's Day, and I'm in the alley of behind the Black Cat with Shearwater, members of Shearwater. Maybe you should go around and introduce yourself so everybody knows your voice.
Howdy. My name's Thor.
And you're the drummer.
I play drums and stuff, yeah.
And stuff.
I'm Kevin. I play keyboards and guitar and stuff. I'm Kimberly. I play bass and occasionally glockenspiel.
I'm Jonathan. I play guitar and banjo and keyboard, and I sing.
And I was thinking about the things that dads might have helped us do, and one of them might have been to come to music in some way, shape, or form. My dad gave me a love for big band music. That was what he was into. And I was wondering if being this Father's Day, just to start off in something that you might not think about, but is there anything about your dad's that got you to where you are today? Let's start with Thor.
My dad was a mechanical engineer and kind of a... We had a machine shop in our house, and he was always making crazy things and fixing things. Mm-hmm. And many of my instruments are homemade.
Huh.
Or home altered.
Like what?
Like on the record and in concert, I play a hammer dulcimer that I built.
Wow.
And many of my drums are either I made them or altered them so that they're not quite, you know, what you would buy at a big music store. They're a little different, and so he did really affect the way that I play music, more than the fact that I play music.
Uh-huh.
Giant rat. This big.
Where are the black cats?
Well, my dad always encouraged me to do what I love and find something that's going to make me happy for my life. And I think that, more so than almost anything else, is sort of the reason why I went to college for music and why I continue to do it, or why at least I wasn't afraid to do it, because there's so much to discourage you from choosing a career in music, especially when you're just sort of out of high school and everybody has like these big dreams and there's all of these people telling you that that's a dumb idea. He was always there to say, well, maybe it is a dumb idea, but you should do it if it's what's going to make you happy.
That's great.
which was a big deal. He also had like four or five classical pieces that I really remember hearing a lot in my when I was younger, and they sort of got me into classical music, which is kind of the primary reason that I went to college. And I've got to play almost all of them.
What'd you study in college, music-wise?
I got a degree in composition from UT. I studied under Kevin Putz. It was fun. I kind of wish I was still in college, but I don't think I'm cut out for it, really.
Do you write classically based music at all?
I do. I kind of fell out of it. It takes a lot of, like...
Time.
It takes, like, sort of a certain kind of mindset, and I ended up working in kind of a different field for a while, and I sort of dropped that off. I've recently started doing it more, and I think I got really burned out on that sort of thing, like, kind of toward the end of college, and so I'm now trying to get back into it, because it's kind of a big deal, and it's sort of... like in that time pursued like playing more pop music and more sort of Shearwater, and I have played in a handful of other bands.
There's an awful lot of orchestration that goes on the record, obviously not on the stage tonight in the same way, but did you have anything to do with that?
No, I joined the band after all
that. Kevin helped us out though. When we did the big show in New York where we had all the string players and the woodwind players, We realized on the day that we were trying to get it together that the scores had some problems in them, and I was just looking at it and it was a bunch of little dots on the page that didn't make any sense to me, and Kevin ran over and said, no, this should be here and this should be here, and the string players went, aha, and it was, he saved the day.
And Kimberly?
I have a very distinct memory of taking long car trips with my parents and my dad putting in a George Winston tape, and we would just listen to these George Winston tapes. And he always really encouraged me to play the piano, because I think it was a sound that he really loved. And in some ways, the main way in which he encouraged me to play is he never made me stop, even though after 6 hours of, you know, me as a child improvising, and I say that with quotes, must have been somewhat painful to listen to, but he was always very very encouraging and sweet about it. And it's so wonderful because I talk to him on the phone now, and he himself is learning to play the piano in his 70s. And he will only practice when he's home alone. Nobody is allowed to hear, but it seems to be giving him a lot of pleasure at this stage in his life as well.
Very sweet.
So, yeah.
Jonathan?
I sang in the church choir with my parents when I was a kid. It was really fun to do, and introduced me to a lot of great music, Palestrina and Byrd and Gibbons, all those wonderful Renaissance composers. And I kind of took it for granted at the time, but now I realize how sort of unusual and special a thing that was to every Wednesday and every Sunday get to go and sit down with your parents and sing this beautiful music. And they've always encouraged me since then. I couldn't have done any of it without them.
I was wondering who might do this for me. Describe the front cover, which is just absolutely gorgeous, to the new record, and tell me the story behind that cover.
Well, the cover is by these artists named Nicholas Kahn and Richard Selesnik, and it depicts a sort of a rocky foreshore with the ocean and mountains in the background. And standing on that foreshore is this figure who's wearing a coat and high boots, and he's covered from head to toe in dark black birds, crows, and I think there's a magpie in there, and there might be a rook hiding out also.
Uh-huh. And a rook is kind of like a crow?
It's a kind of crow, yeah. It's a crow relative that lives in Europe and Asia.
Do you all share Jonathan's love, or have you begun to have an appreciation for birds, or do you carry that around? I assume you must carry that around with you, Jonathan, because it's the references are ever present.
I think I was officially won over the day that he woke me up at 6 o'clock in the morning to take me to the sewage treatment ponds in Austin, Texas, to go bird watching.
It's a great place to see birds. What?
It's the best place in town to see birds, but still getting up at six. Yeah, for that, I think I'm officially a convert.
When I was at the South by Southwest Music Festival this past March, I had just gotten there before I was going to take a walk down the street. I sat down at a bench, and there were these, I'd never heard them before, I don't know what you would call them, but they were the noisiest birds I'd ever...
Oh, that kind of stuff?
What were they?
They're great-tailed grackles. They're self-introduced from Central America, and they've been making their way into North America over the past, I think, 20, 30 years. And they're completely astonishing. The males have this beautiful blue, black, purple kind of glossy plumage. And they sing these outrageous mechanical clicking and whirring songs that sound like broken machines or something. They're extremely strange.
Does that the imagery of birds and you went to school? You're an ornithologist.
Yeah, right? I have a master's degree in geography.
Are you a doctor?
No, I'm not. I keep getting awarded that degree by different magazines and things. It's nearly not true. But I do love birds, and I studied a kind of bird that lives in the Falklands and Tierra del Fuego for my master's degree.
And what kind of bird was that?
It was called the striated caracara. It's like a cross between a hawk and a crow is what it sort of looks like. It's a falcon relative, and it feeds off penguin and albatross colonies.
It feeds off them?
Wow. Yeah, the chicks and eggs in the summertime. And in the wintertime, they have to live by their wits, which has made them over thousands of years very, very curious. So when you come ashore on these islands, they come right up to you and start going through your stuff.
Wow.
It's very bizarre.
How does do you hand words around to the band, Jonathan? And
No. it's weird. I mean, for me, making the process of making the record is kind of like sculpture. You start with this big block that you don't know what it is, and you keep hacking away at it until something starts to emerge from it. And the lyrics for me come usually. I'll have a few phrases that I know when we go in to a song and to an album, but as they start to interact with each other and you start seeing how the songs want to go together, I was working on the lyrics up until the very last day of recording. So it kind of... I like working on it as an entire piece.
Did these things change for all of you as musicians as you play them live? I mean, the the record sure must sound so different than what you're going to do tonight.
They do slowly change as you play them live night after night. And we had the strange opportunity on the last record to remake part of it after having played those songs live for like a year.
Wow.
And that was like redoing your senior year of high school or something, you know? It was like this fantasy where you could go back and do what you wish you'd done. And yeah, these songs are fairly new, and it's slow, but they are already changing from the way that we put them on the record. You know, you find neat little spaces in them and different ways to either fill or leave more emptiness in them. And
I saw you bowing. Were you bowing the glockenspiel keys? Is that what?
Yeah, we bow the glockenspiel and the vibraphone, and we have a few bows on stage, bass bows.
And that would be, for the people who are listening, a very long and piercing sound.
Yeah, it almost sounds like feedback, but it's like a perfect pitch. A lot of the time, if a sound man doesn't know we're going to do that, he just starts reaching for knobs the first time we do it. And several of them have told me, man, you freaked me out with that screaming A. It does sound just like feedback at first.
Anything that have been on your minds that you...
Gosh. This band has nearly survived the Bush administration.
Yes, it's true.
Traveling around, you sort of get a feel for how people in the world feel about their world. And we've sort of watched America and Europe go from feeling just abject despair to real hope, and that's pretty nice. The Europeans get sick of American liberals going there and apologizing for our government, and it's nice to see things changing.
It is funny that when you go on a tour, you get sort of, especially like a whole U.S. tour, which you can do in 3 weeks or 3.5 weeks if you really book it, you get a snapshot of the country at that particular time, which is really interesting. It's just, you sort of sample that, even though you're mostly in dark clubs and on street corners, even then you still get this little gist of the sort of zeitgeist of that moment.
And you feel, all agree, there's a sense of change, a sense of
yeah.
a turning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Hope no for question. The first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.